Coming up on this week's episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy.
Where does creativity come from if not empty space?
Mm-hmm.
You know, infinite possibilities is empty space.
Hey everyone, Dr. Hyman here. Now, I can't stress the importance of good enough sleep. I know that when I don't get enough high quality rest, my mood, my brain function, and my energy all really suffer. And this is something I see with so many of my patients too. So I'm always looking for ways to enhance my sleep routine so I can wake up feeling amazing. And my new favorite find is a red light therapy device from Juve, which has totally changed the quality of my sleep for the better. Light plays a major role in our sleep cycle. And the blue light that we're all exposed to on our phones, TVs, and computer screens is wreaking havoc on our melatonin production and our circadian rhythms. Red light, on the other hand, helps support healthy melatonin production, and studies have shown that it helps people get better overall sleep. Red light therapy is a super gentle, non-invasive treatment where a device with medical-grade LEDs delivers concentrated light to your skin. It actually helps you produce melatonin so you can fall asleep faster, stay asleep, and wake up feeling more rested. And it could not be easier. I just stand in front of this relaxing red light for a few minutes a day. That's it. Now, not only is Juve great for getting better sleep, but it can also boost collagen production. It helps you recover from injuries, aches and pains, and reduces overall inflammation. To check out the Juve products for yourself, head over to juve.com/pharmacy. That's juvv.com/pharmacy, pharmacy. And once you're there, you'll see a special bonus the Juve team is giving away to my listeners. Just use the code pharmacy, pharmacy, at the checkout. This is one of the simplest tools to support your body's own ability to make melatonin and get deep, restful sleep, and it's available to use right in your own home. I hope you'll check it out and see why I love using Juve. I want to tell you about a special deal on two products that I love and that I believe are really essential to everyone's home. In fact, I have them. Many of you know that 2 years ago, I got really sick, and the primary cause was toxic mold in my 120-year-old barn that was converted to a house. It was pretty horrible, and it woke me up to the challenges and the importance of indoor air quality. Now, I, like many other folks, have a variation in my genes that makes it a little harder for me to detox bad substances. So I have to be really careful about the water I drink and the air I breathe. Now, this is an issue that everyone should care about, not just people who can't detox, because it affects all of us. I actually learned that living 2,000 feet away from a major highway can have a severe effect on your health. We know that when it comes to our water, we're unfortunately exposed to things like microbes and pesticides and plastics, prescription meds, metals, chlorine, all this stuff adds up and can cause so many serious health challenges. Now, I don't mean to scare anybody, because there's actually a lot we can do. A few years ago, I was introduced to Peter Spiegel, who's the founder of Ideal Living, and he taught me a lot about the best filtration systems. Peter is so passionate about water and air that he spent over $1 million and many years researching the best ways to filter them, leading to the AquaTrue water filter and the Air Doctor air filter. I was really inspired by Peter's dedication to clean air and water and brought both of these systems into my apartment in New York City. And let me tell you, they're dramatically changing my life. The AquaTrue filter actually features a 4-stage filtration system that removes 20 or more contaminants than the best-selling water filters out there. It removes all the nasty stuff that you've read about in the news, like lead, PFOAs, hexavalent chromium, remember Erin Brockovich, that's what she was known for, and so much more. And the Air Doctor is the first affordable air purifier that not only removes 100% of the particles in the air, but also the vast majority of volatile organic chemicals and gases. It features an ultra HEPA filter, which is 100 times more effective than ordinary HEPA filters. And I love both these filters, and I use them in my home, in my medical clinic. They're affordable, they're easy to use, they move around, they're easy to manage. So I'm teaming up with AquaTrue and Air Doctor to offer you both these systems for a special price. Now, with a special price, you can save more than $400 on these systems. You can learn more about this offer at drhyman.com/filter. Again, that's drhyman.com/filter. I think you're going to love Air Doctor and the AquaTrue water filter as much as I do. And thanks for tuning in. And now for this week's episode.
Hi, everyone. Just wanted to let you know that this episode contains some colorful language. So if you're listening with kids, you might want to save this episode for later.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mark Hyman. Welcome to The Doctor's Pharmacy. That's pharmacy with an F, F-A-R-M-A-C-Y, a place for conversations that matter. And today's conversation matters if you care about your soul, and you care about love, and you care about family, and you care about making the world a better place. Because our guest today is doing that every single day, day in, day out. I've known him for many years. I've been a fan, actually. We haven't got to hang out that much, but a little bit. And his work is telling stories through poetry that change people's lives. And I'm so excited to have him here. His name is NQ. He's a National Poetry Slam champion, an award-winning poet, a multi-platinum songwriter. His groundbreaking achievements, including being named to Oprah's Super Soul 100 list of the world's most influential thought leaders. That is no small feat. He's been the first spoken word artist to perform with Cirque du Soleil. He's featured on A&E, ESPN, HBO's Deaf Poetry Jam, sports rapping poetry on ESPN. That's great. He's inspired audiences around the world, including me, through his live performances and storytelling workshops. And many of his recent poetry videos have gone viral with over 70 million views. And I'm really excited to have you here, NQ. Thank you for joining the Doctor's Pharmacy.
Thank you so much for having me, man. I'm a fan of yours as well.
So, you know, I was checking out your book that's coming out, Inquire Within, book of poetry. And, you know, poetry sort of kind of in a way in our fast digital culture, people just don't take the time to deeply dive into poetry. And it is one of those things that shapes people, that moves people. It's different than a novel. It's different than nonfiction book because it brings us together in ways that and moves us in ways together that other words can't. And just to share a little bit about your book, it's a book that contemplates universal issues of love, loss, forgiveness, transformation, and belief. Your book, Inquire Within, shines a light on our lives and provides a wholly unique and dynamic lens through which to think about ourselves and our world. It's rhythmic, it's original, it's authentic, inspiring. It's a journey to the center of the soul, which I think is a good place to be today in our chaotic world where we're so far away from our soul. Inquire Within is a provocative, entertaining debut from an award-winning poet. You'll never look at poetry again the same way, and you will probably never think about yourself and your place in the world the same way. So I'm so excited. It's really a tremendous book of poetry, and I think something that we need to be focused more on as a pause from the chaos of life to savor what really matters and to think about things that really matter in a different way. So thank you for doing that.
I appreciate everything that you said right now. Really, it touches me, man. I think that one of the reasons that I wrote the book and that it was entitled Inquire Within is because I had to inquire within myself to create it. And the person that's reading it and holding it in their hands, they have to inquire within the pages and ultimately inquire within themselves. Because when you think about this modern day society that we're in, consumerism, the culture basically trains us to look outside of ourselves for validation over and over again.
I think the best way to solve that would be to turn the flip function off on the phone so people can't do selfies.
right. You know, it's funny. I was visiting the prison that Mandela was in for years and years and years in South Africa once. And as we were passing his cell, somebody took out their phone and took a selfie of themselves smiling in front of the cell. And I was like, they are not present to why they're there or the experience that he had.
Yeah.
And they're not reflecting. So I think really that's what I was talking about is everything is trying to take from you. It's trying to take your attention. It's trying to take your money. It's trying to take your likes, your information, your love. And technology is this incredible thing that was, you know, created to bring the world together. And yet with all of this technology and the internet and even what we're doing here today, you know, we'll never be able to quantify the ripples of this getting put out into the world. And that's wonderful. It's a really beautiful thing, but it's also isolating people.
Yeah.
People feel more alone than they've ever felt in their entire lives, and they don't feel a connection beyond their screens. And so I think there's a difference between, you know, using these tools and these tools using us, you know. And, you know, if you think about what people need more than anything else right now, it's actually being quiet to find their own answers. Mm. You know, if I don't know something, I automatically look on Google. Or, you know, I look in a book, you know, I try to find the answers outside of myself. And really, people need to inquire within. And I hope that this book winds up being a window for them to do that within themselves.
So good, which is so powerful. And for you, I mean, it sort of was sort of a sideways journey into being a poet. You never sort of set out to be a spoken word poet.
I don't think there's any straight way journey into being a poet, you know?
I mean, how did you get into this? Because, you know, it's like a very novel career and you're smashing it.
Thank you.
But how, you know, I'm like, I would love to get up and say poetry and tell stories all day, but like, how am I going to pay the rent? But right. You figured out, you know, how to do this in a way that's so powerful that moves people and people gravitate to you. So how did you get from like have no intention to being a poet to being this killer poet?
Well, first of all, it took me a really, really long time to figure out how to monetize it. I mean, I was not doing it for money or, you know, fame or anything like that. I was doing it because I was passionate about storytelling and sharing my experiences through this particular art form. But I started out rapping when I was 13 years old. And, you know, I grew up in a single parent household. My mom's a school teacher. My dad wasn't around. And so I think freestyling initially, when I fell in love with it, was my first form of meditation. Because when you're freestyling, you literally can't think of anything else but the next word that you're saying. You know, it puts you in the moment like nothing else can, and it provides an outlet for you to get thoughts and emotions out of your system that you might not have another avenue to do so. So that was a huge thing for me. And then when I was 19, I wound up in an open mic for poets in Los Angeles called the Poetry Lounge.
Oh, isn't that where like Jack Kerouac and all those guys, or was that a different?
No, I don't think Jack Kerouac ever came to the lounge, but they were part of the beat movement.
Yeah.
This was kind of the spoken word movement.
Yeah.
And it was a different time period, but the talent was insane. And it was the first time that I ever, from an audience standpoint, saw people being celebrated for their vulnerability. I mean, if someone would get up and say something true, you know, it's 350 people in the audience every single Tuesday night, and they would be like, oh, whoa, you know, and snap. And, you know, so there was a lot of alchemy that was happening in the room of taking these stories and this pain and transforming it into something beautiful. And I just never left. I started doing my rapping a cappella. People responded, and that was the beginning of me becoming a poet.
It's true. You know, we make sense of the world through story.
Yeah.
You know, I tend to be fact driven and more concrete, but the truth is that we change through story. We change through our emotional context and through having our heart touched and our soul moved. I mean, that's what actually drives people to change and grow and learn. It's such a gift to be able to take that.
Can I just say something off of what you said? Because I feel that you actually are incredibly good at taking facts and turning them into story.
Yeah.
Like that's something
I try.
I've seen that. Well, I've seen you speak a number of times, and every single time you engage the audience, you make them lean in, you put it into your books. And I think that's very important, is to find a way to make facts entertaining for people so that they walk away with something specific that they can then apply to their life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. But you know, it's the artists that, and the creators and the sort of dreamers that actually change the world, right?
Yeah.
It's like that old Apple ad, you know, think different.
And
it's the disruptors. And I think in our world where we're so all disconnected from each other and we're so not in our soul journey, this book, Inquire Within, is such an invitation to get back to that. I think, you know, we're so distracted digitally that we've lost the ability to just be with ourselves.
Yeah.
I grew up, I'm 60 years old, so I grew up with no cell phone, with no internet, with no email, with no texting, with no social media. And it wasn't until I was, you know, God, it was like in my 40s that really it started to come on.
Right.
And I remember those times of just savoring, of just being, of reflecting, of wandering, of walking, and
it's necessary.
I really been focusing more and more on like leaving my phone at home and not bringing it. And with my wife, for example, you know, I gave her a present, which was a little box, and she's like, oh, that's such a nice box. I'm like, no. I put my phone in the box and leave it there for the weekend.
Right.
And you get the gift of my presence, you know.
That's beautiful.
And that's what, and she started crying, and you know, I'm not always good at it, but I've realized that I thought I did it for her.
Yeah.
And when I had that weekend to myself, I just was able to lay on the floor and listen to jazz and play with the cats and not have to look at my phone every 3 seconds, you know?
Yeah.
It's such a horrible habit that takes us away from the spaciousness of needing to be able to actually connect with ourselves. So,
and also it's like, where does creativity come from if not empty space?
Mm-hmm.
You know, infinite possibilities is empty space. So that's why people practice through meditation. And my meditation practice has been, you know, a non-negotiable part of my life. But that's one avenue to finding that space. Even just sitting down and being in nature, or being by yourself in the silence and seeing what comes up, you know, but not using a mantra or an anchor to get down, which is, as I said, non-negotiable for me.
Yeah.
But there are other ways to find that space and to find that silence. And you might be surprised at the answers that come out of that.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, how I became a doctor was I basically grabbed my backpack, filled it up with a week's worth of food, and just walked for a week. And just walked and walked. I went backpacking in the Shenandoah Valley, and all by myself. And I just had this incredible spaciousness and time to really reflect and be and think. And
do you remember the moment that it clicked in for you?
Yeah, I'm like, I really want to do something where I'm in contribution and service, and you know, actually add something to the world. And you know, I felt like, why not? Because I wasn't pre-med at all. It was after I graduated from college. I'm like, okay, now what? I got a degree in Buddhism, so what the heck am I going to do?
That's cool, man.
I'm not going to become a monk, but the principles of Buddhism are about healing. It's really about healing the mind and healing the soul. And it's all sort of connected. And it just sort of took me to like, okay, well, why don't I try being a doctor? And it sort of worked out. It's been okay.
Well, you've also been able to bridge those two worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? But it was really taking that long, extended, solo, walking, being in nature with nothing.
Right.
You know, just me and my backpack and my little camp stove and my sleeping pad. And my, you know, I don't think we had Patagonia back then. it was just a really special moment. And I think I'm actually, my wife and I were talking about it last night. You know, my life is so on, right? I'm doing so many things because I feel compelled to be a contribution to what's good in the world.
And you have momentum. So you want to, of course, follow your enthusiasm and your momentum.
Yeah. But I'm like, you know, we're just talking about, like, I think I want to take a week or two and just go have a solo journey. I don't know what or where or how, but I feel like, you know.
I absolutely support that. I think you should 100% do it. I mean, even just,
it's like
people
soul
think
food.
You need to, people think you need to be around other people to feel less lonely. Nature can make you feel really connected. Just being with nature, because, you know, it's like, I was thinking this the other day. The birds aren't singing to win a Grammy. You know, they don't want to go platinum. You know,
they don't want to get on Oprah.
They don't care, man. You know, they are in nature. They are nature. And so when we're around nature, it is, as you said, an invitation for us to step more into the moment and to fully be present.
You know, that's so true. And a lot of art comes from pain.
Yeah.
And you talk about some of the challenges you've had about your dad not being around, you know, growing with a challenging environment, some of the setbacks and failures you've had. And you also say how it can be our greatest celebration. So how do we sort of reframe challenges in our life to a place where we can grow? And how have you done this for yourself?
Well, the celebration comes from the transformation, you know, so I think you have to celebrate it first. You have to, you know, everyone's so afraid of their pain in our society. Mm. We are so fucking afraid of our pain, man. And everyone's finding ways to run from themselves so that they don't have to feel it. But the reality is if it doesn't come up and out, it will manifest itself in other ways in our lives. And there's nothing really to be afraid of. And so if we could find a way to celebrate our pain, to feel through it, to release it, to transform it, that is a pure form of alchemy. And you can do that through creation. You can do that with sharing. You can do it in many, many ways. You can do it through yoga, you know, athletics, activities that you decide to do, sitting with nature, as we discussed. But you have to do it. And the first thing is to not try to hide from it within yourself or with other people, because we might have different circumstances, but we're all going through the same human experience.
Mm-hmm. And you know, for you, you know, the challenges you face sort of, I imagine, were what spurred you to start to write and to speak your truth and to talk about the hard things.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it certainly was the biggest outlet for me. you know, poetry ultimately has been the biggest outlet because, you know, and even when I teach workshops, all I'm really doing is providing people an opportunity to explore these moments who have changed who they are through this particular art form. And when they do something like that and they choose something that's moving and meaningful to them, they get the story outside of their system. And when they can see it, they have more separation from the story and the story doesn't own them as much. Mm. So they have a sense of empowerment. And then when they give it away and they see the mirror of humanity in other people's eyes, they have a sense of feeling less alone. So I had that same experience. I'm trying to provide people the same experience that I've had with poetry over and over and over again. And all the things that I'm writing are really just, you know, either me purging or praying.
Yeah.
But they're reminders to myself of the life that I want to live.
Yeah. So powerful. You know, and I think in the telling of those stories, there's something that happens. And it's happened to me many times when I've listened to you say your poetry. It's almost like it's like a crack that happens, like something snaps where you shift your perspective, where you see things in ways you didn't see them before, where you make connections you didn't make before, where you're inspired in ways that you didn't realize you need to be inspired. You're emboldened to make changes based on, you know, what happens from the raw telling of the truth in that form. And it's sort of unlike anything else. I mean, you can watch a movie, you can listen to music, you can watch a play, and maybe it'll do some of that.
Yeah.
But there's something sort of magical. And I think, you know, you've really been able to sort of break through some of those stories that you, were your origin stories. How do you help people break through the stories that they create for themselves?
Well, first of all, I just want to piggyback off of what you said. Some of my most incredible art experiences have been in the audience watching poetry. Yeah. Other poets getting up and sharing their lives.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really been transformative for me. So I think that inspired me to do that within myself. And now I hope that I'm inspiring other people to do that within themselves. When I do the actual workshops, you know, as long as people start in a place that's true and then they give it time and space, the poem will surprisingly almost write itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my process. I mean, people ask me all the time, where do you get your inspiration from? And I just say, I pay attention. I pay attention if something moves me, you know, if something annoys me, if something inspires me. And then I start there. And then I try to get out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm the vehicle and the obstacle for my art.
It's more of downloading than writing, is that it?
Yeah, but it's downloaded through my experience. So it's like I have to be there. You know, like people always talk about the ego, you know, how to lose the ego. You can't lose the ego. You know, your ego is a part of humanity. There's no way to lose your ego, but you cannot operate from your ego as much.
Right.
You know, you can find a way to know that your ego is a part of you being, you know, involved in this human experiment or this illusion of separation, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of separation, what effect did your father's absence have on you, and how did it sort of be a force for good in your life, even though it was sort of bad? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I have a poem that I explore this in the book. It's called Father Time, and it really kind of delves into my whole experience, and ultimately, it's about forgiveness, full circle. You know, it came to me forgiving myself and forgiving him and being grateful. You know, because who would I be without that experience? Yeah. I certainly wouldn't be who I am today. I would be someone else, but I wouldn't be who I am today. Mm. And that's the thing, is every single thing that happened to us, whether we understand it or not, we choose to be a victim to it,
right,
or to be empowered by the transformation that comes from it.
Right.
And I mean, it's not a product, it's a process.
Mm.
And I'm still, of course, working on it. But I have a lot of peace with that subject in my life now.
So great. It sort of reminds me of a book by Ram Dass who just died called Grist for the Mill. Like everything is grist for the mill. Mm. Everything is sort of juicy stuff for us to do our soul work with.
Yeah. Right?
And I think even in our culture, the whole idea of soul work is not something we really think that much about anymore.
Right.
We're so outward focused. And in some ways, we've been co-opted by, you know, large tech companies and large businesses that are actually capturing our attention
designed to be addictive,
right,
that sort of usurps our free will and that drives us into choices that don't serve our good,
right,
and serve their good.
Yeah.
And in a way, poetry is like a sword that cuts through all that.
Yeah.
And I think it brings you back to what is true.
I think poets have a responsibility, like all artists, to speak truth to power, but they're also speaking truth to illusion.
Yeah.
You know, there's this mass distraction machine that is always trying to take, you know, and poetry doesn't want anything from you,
right,
other than to be.
That's so true. So we can talk about poetry all day, but I'd love for you to share a couple of poems.
For sure.
The first one I really want to hear is in the book, Inquire Within, which everybody should get. It's a phenomenal doorway to wisdom, the soul, to cracking open parts of yourself that probably need to be cracked open. And the first one's about love. So can you tell us a little bit about it and then share the poem with us?
Absolutely. And I appreciate you saying that, man. So this first piece is called 85. And I originally wrote it because I used to live in this little back house. And the woman that owned the main house, her mom moved in at a certain point. Her name's Dolores. Mm. She was in her 80s. Mm. And we shared a kitchen together.
You and grandma. So,
yeah. And basically, we would sit. We'd have coffee. We'd talk about life and love and my ex-girlfriends at the time, you know. And I came to really love her, man, you know. And after she was there for about 6 months, I woke up one night. It was like 3 a.m. and I had this big window and I could see the lights from the ambulance outside the blinds. And she was getting taken away on a stretcher. I watched her and she was still alive, but she was having major health complications. And I went and I visited her in the hospital and she had tubes in and out of her system. And she had a really high fever and she didn't recognize me. And they said that she was in real trouble. And so I sat with her for a while and I just basically like said my goodbyes because I thought that that was her time and I didn't want her to suffer anymore.
Mm.
But she got better.
All right.
And they ended up getting her better enough to where she could move to a retirement community. And after about a month of her being in this retirement community, I went and visited her and we were literally like sitting outside and you know, she was in a really good mood. We were in the garden and I was like, Dolores, why are you in such a good mood? And she leans in and she goes, I met a guy.
Ah!
And so in the month
she
had been
85.
There, she literally met a guy and they had started dating.
Wow. Love that.
And I just thought that was so beautiful, you know, not only because love could be around any corner, but because I thought her life was over.
Over.
And not only did she survive, she was excited about something again.
Yeah.
She was surprised by something again. And oftentimes at any age, people just become obligated to the choices that they're making.
Ossified.
You know, and they just like look around. They're not surprised. They're not excited. Mm. And I'm curious, what will I be like in my 80s? What will I wear? You know, what will I want to be enthusiastic? Yeah, it's probably the exact same thing. But like, what will I want to explore? You know, and so that's where this poem
amazing
came
all
from.
Right,
it's called 85.
Give it to us.
I want to fall in love at 85. Go on shuffleboard dates and dance to hip hop from 95. We would also listen to the song Staying Alive, but only for the message. Otherwise, we'd keep away from disco. It's depressing. We'd rock matching tracksuits and rope gold chains. We'd look like Run DMC, but in their old age. We'd take aerobics classes and wear bifocal glasses and eat at IHOP and hold hands at Sunday masses. And when it comes to the bedroom, well, nothing much would happen in the bedroom because we're 85. But we would still be down to take a walk or take a drive or sit and talk or have a drink, watch the passersby, ask each other why and how and who and where and when, and then we'd laugh and cry again about the people we had been.
Mm.
And I would touch her withered skin and comment on how thin it is to keep in something infinite. And she would smile sweet and blush, then tell me that I think too much. She's right, I think too much. It's always been a problem. But then again, that's how I made my green like the goblin. When I was in my 20s, I was eating top ramen, counting up my pennies, saving up to go food shopping. But now I'm 85, and somehow I feel more alive. I turned my hearing aid up and bumped Jurassic 5 or the Jackson 5. I read the sports page while she peruses classifieds. We like antique stores, garage sales, and barter buys. And when it comes to the bedroom, well, hopefully, every once in a while, she lets me knock her boots into the floral patterns of our bedpost, then hold her head close like death isn't chasing us, planning on erasing us and replacing us with better versions of us, reshaping us, remaking us, then recreating us with new identities so we can make new memories. Hush, little baby. Learn to walk and talk and think and lie and feel and fight and love and die and never get the answers why. She dips a joint of grass in wheatgrass and we get high. Her hair is silver as the moon in the Miami sky. We still pop pills, but it's not the Molly anymore. Whenever we can't sleep, we listen to the ocean floor. She got a sound of the CCD for me from the Brookstone store. And ever since, I've been snoring like a really good metaphor for snoring. Sorry, I go blank sometimes. What? I'm 85. I'm not complaining. I'm just happy that I'm still alive and happy that I have my better half by my side, Superfly. She doesn't look a day over 75. When I first saw her, I was totally in awe. She was classical, so I was like, yo, yo, ma. And that was all it took. A single look and I was shook. I fell for her like some loose shingles from our Spanish roof. And I'm a lover till she loses every last root and has to glue dentures to her gums to chew solid food. Ooh, now that's real love, dude. That's some push comes to shove love. Not when it's convenient love. Hospital bed love. Feed her ice chips, love. Never leave the room, love. Sleeping in the chair, love. Pray to up above, love. Have to pull the plug, love. Miss her in my bones, love. Everything about her, love. Die within a month, love. Can't live without her love. Love. The only reason that we are alive. And none of us should have to wait until we're 85.
Wow. Made me cry. Yeah. Holy shit. Wow. I don't think I've ever cried in my podcast before.
It's all good, man. Thank you, for listening. What touched you about it?
Oh, wow. See, that's the thing about poetry. You can talk about it all day, but then it's like spiritual surgery.
Yeah.
And it's like I found myself having the chills, laughing, crying, like just longing, remembering what's important, remembering what I want.
Mm.
Remembering what matters, and like, yeah, it's like, wow, holy shit.
You know what, man? Like, first of all, I appreciate your vulnerability because it makes me feel closer to you. You know, I see that as strength and it makes me feel connected to you in a deeper way.
Yeah.
And I have the same experience. I mean, I cried the first time I wrote that because it was reminding me of the same things that you're talking about.
Feed her ice chips, love, man. Wow. Like, I wonder, does the book come with a box of Kleenex? Because I think you should do a package thing where the book.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The book has, you know, there's two ways to consume it and both are different. You know, the book has 60 illustrations. So we worked with an amazing artist named Musa Sharik in London. And he created these really, really deep and layered illustrations around the concepts of the poetry that helped to kind of bring you into a more, you know, connected experience. And it gives you something else to look at.
Yeah.
And then the way that we formatted everything and the way that we put the order is meant to bring you through this conceptual through line. There's two halves. There's inhale and exhale. And inhale is personal poems. And so it's almost like my own poetic hero's journey. And then exhale is social and political. And yeah. It's change yourself, and then you can change the world. So that's one way to kind of consume it. And then the other way is the audiobook, which is me, you know, recording all of these poems. Yeah. And then you get to hear the rhythms and the stylistic things, the voices that I'm using. Mm. And both are interesting to do on their own, and then they're really fascinating to do together.
Yeah.
And this is literally, it's the first time I've ever had a home for my art. I've been writing poetry for 25 years. So someone asked me the other day, they were like, how long did the book take? And I was like,
25 years.
Yeah, 25 years, pretty much. I mean, I've been working on it over a year. But then one of the oldest poems in the book, the father piece, is 14 years old.
Wow.
And it took me 10 years to make that 14-year-old poem. So wow. 25 years.
All I can say is Rilke has some stiff competition.
Thank you, brother.
You're one of my favorite poets who gets in the same way inside, under your skin and into your soul. Wow, so we could talk a lot more, but you know, that was a within poem.
Hmm.
And I would love you to share a without poem.
Yeah.
A poem about being in the world,
yeah,
and what we all need to do is in community to actually deal with the real issues we're facing. And you know, one of them I talk a lot about on the podcast is the food system and climate change. And you know, we were recently at an event for a nonprofit called Kiss the Ground, which everybody should check out, which trains farmers and creates educators around regenerative agriculture. And you did this really compelling poem about climate change and the earth and the soil. And you know, it's something I know a fair bit about, but it just really opened my eyes in so many ways, and I'd love for you to share that.
Yeah, happy to.
I hope I don't cry in this one, too. Oh, gosh.
You know, I'll say one thing before I start. I watched the State of the Union last night with everyone else, and he didn't mention climate change one time.
Mm.
The biggest existential threat to humanity right now was not even fucking mentioned.
No.
And it just made me so angry.
Yeah.
You know, so this is a poem that I wrote about climate change, because climate change doesn't give a shit about our nations. It doesn't care about our religions. It doesn't care about our races. You know, if a spaceship showed up right now, it doesn't care about anything, man. You know, it is the great equalizer.
Mm, it's true.
So I think we need to all wake up to that.
You know, it's interesting. Just a little side note before you start on the poem. I just bought this book, We Are the Weather, by Jonathan Safer Foer, who, you know, the first two chapters have nothing to do with climate change. The first chapter is about how every molecule of air we take in, you know, contains other molecules from people who breathe breaths on the planet, from Julius Caesar to Hitler. And going back forever. So we're literally breathing in the breath of Jesus Christ. We're breathing in the breath of Moses and Muhammad and Martin Luther King and whoever walked the planet. And and we all are all the time in every breath. So we're so connected through so many different ways.
Right.
So we're all one community and we all are connected. And the second chapter was about how during World War II, you know, the United States, even though it was in an imminent danger of attack, hunkered down and created victory gardens. All the lights went out at dark. So the U-boats couldn't see where we are. But even inland, they did. Mm. They had planes flying over the Midwest because they were sort of telling people, we need to be part of this. They had people ration their food. In fact, people got healthier because they ate less sugar and flour and other things. So we came together as a nation to fight a common enemy.
Right.
And we did it through sacrifice
that
actually prevented the ultimate sacrifice, which was the end of our world as we know it.
Yeah.
So I think it's the same kind of thing. We need to get that we're all in this together, and then we get that we need to make changes. So share with us your poem.
Yeah, can I just piggyback on that for a second? Because that is exactly right. It's not even climate change. This is a war. We need to all look at this like it's a world war against our own behaviors of greed.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it's crazy that we're still profiting off of the suffering of people and the planet. and that we're okay with rewarding that. And this fucking ridiculous argument that, like, well, America could change policy, but the world is huge and there's a lot of other places that are using energy at a quicker pace. It's just, we should be leading by example.
Yeah.
It's not even an argument that's worth discussing.
Yeah.
You know, so it is an actual responsibility, an existential responsibility. You're not going to have to convince kids that climate change is real. They're going to be experiencing it on a moment-to-moment basis. So, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, we're just, like, you know, sacrificing our children's future.
Yeah, yeah. And so this is something that I wrote about it. It's called One Little Dot. And it's really ultimately about definitions and ownership of this particular issue.
It's true, because most people feel disempowered.
Yeah.
And we can't do anything, but you bring it back home.
Yeah. And I've felt that way many times.
Yeah.
And yet, here we are. How can something this big be invisible? The environment is everywhere, and yet it isn't visible. Maybe if we saw it, we would see it's not invincible and have to take responsibility as individuals. How can something this big be invisible? If it's all around us, it should show itself on pure principle. The scientists are certain that the damage is residual and climate change data is reaching levels that are critical, yet somehow that's political. We argue over math. Our citizens are too cynical to believe in facts. We make excuses and hold on to the recent past. We don't want to sacrifice, so we refuse to ask. I grew up in a city. It's all I ever knew. So even now, I have nothing to compare it to. I have to hit the park to see more than a tree or two. I have to visit nature like it's in a fucking zoo. But California was wild before the parking lots, before the mass malls, before designer shops, before the strip clubs, before the sea change, when mountain lions roam freely over freeways, before the fast food, before the freeze frames. We live around a bunch of dead shit these days. It's not an argument for better or worse. It's an observation on how we've been treating Mother Earth. See, we protect what is ours. My land, my life, my house, my kids, my job, my wife, my dog, my car, my country, my culture. But when it comes to nature, our perspective is external. The planet, the forest, the ocean, the sky, the mountains, the valleys, always the. Never mind if it's not me, never mind. I'm too busy all the time. And without the ownership, we ignore the warning signs. Just look at all the species on the planet that are dying. The coral reefs, the honeybees, mysteriously dying. 1/4 of all the mammals that exist are dying. 1/3 of all amphibians are at the risk of dying. We're on a path to mass extinction. It's almost like we're trying, because we're relying on an atmosphere that we've been frying. I could use more statistics, but you probably think I'm lying, because over half the politicians we elect deny them. Well, since when did their opinions outweigh the science? I thought experiments were fundamentally unbiased. Capitalism uses nature as its example and excuse for competition. The only problem is we've removed it from the ecosystem. Profit and balance in the market are attainable, but growth without a conscience is completely unsustainable. I mean, a lion doesn't kill all the gazelles. Why do we have to have it all to ourselves? Pretty soon, there'll be nothing left but concrete and cars. And when you see an animal, it'll be like seeing a movie star.
the planet, the forest, the ocean, the skies, the mountains, the valleys, always the. Never mind if it's not me, never mind. I'm too busy all the time. And without the ownership, we ignore the warning signs. Our planet, our forest, our ocean, our skies, our mountains, our valleys, always we, always mine. My planet, my forest, my ocean, my sky, my mountains, my valleys, always we, always mine, always ours, always yours. Yours. One little dot in trillions of stars. One little dot. It's all that we've got. We just forgot that none of it's ours. We just forgot that all of it's ours. One little dot in trillions of stars.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. It's easy to make it their problem.
Yeah.
Not my problem. And I think it's so different to shift the frame to thinking about this as something that matters to us.
Yeah.
Like that ownership conscious question is just so not in the dialogue. And yeah. I think that's why there's so much polarization. It's like, you know, I always joke, everybody's favorite radio station is WIFM, what's in it for me?
Mm-hmm.
But the definition of me needs to be a little bit bigger.
Right.
Right? Because without all this, there's no me or we or us, right?
Yeah. And I'm once again, relearning that every time I speak the poem and finding new ways that I can do that for myself when I fall back asleep.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. This is such incredible work. I heard a lot of poets, and you know, there's a difference about your work that has, you know, deep spiritual lessons in it that are, you know, I think a lot of poets try to imbue in their poetry, but it's really hard to do. And I'm just so moved every time I hear you. Like, I'm so grateful that you're doing this work in the world.
Thank
you,
man.
Everybody needs to get this book, Inquire Within. Get the audiobook and get the book. Get them both and listen to them together, read them together. And slow down. Slow the heck down with your life so you can just be. And, you know, poetry is kind of like meditation in a way. It's like I remember when I was in my 20s, I would like sometimes climb a mountain with a book of poetry and just sit and read the poetry, or sometimes read it out loud.
Was there a specific book that you're thinking of?
Well,
when you said
actually,
that?
Yeah. I mean, I remember sitting like, on the coast in California, like Topanga Canyon, up on the hills, looking over the ocean on this sort of, you know, escarpment, looking over, and I had Rilke, a book of poems by Rilke. It's a German poet from the early 20th century, and it's such beautiful poetry.
Which book do you remember?
I think it was Aduna Elegies.
Okay,
it just was so much about love, and you know, like. He talked about this concept of in-seeing, like, you know, seeing somebody's soul. And I think that's, you know, like, honestly, just sitting here talking to you today, I'm like, you know, I've been going through this process of myself, just sort of rethinking what I'm doing and how I'm being and how I want to live and, you know, what matters.
What have you been thinking of, and what have you been aspiring to?
I've, you know, when I was in my 20s, I was in the more being stage.
Yeah.
And then for the last 30 years, I've been in the more doing stage, and I want to get back to being a human being instead of a human doing.
Right.
And not dealing with 400 emails a day and not having to be in 10 cities in 20 days and just do good work, but really change what I'm doing, because I think I'll be more effective.
Right.
I'll be happier. And I'm craving it. I feel like I, you know, I'm craving it, and I got a lot of joy from the things I do. I get a lot of nourishment from my family and friends. I get a lot of good, but the unplug,
like, right?
You know, and just be.
Yeah.
It's just funny because my wife and I literally were talking about that last night, about me taking a week or two and just, you know, taking a walking tour like I did before, just walking.
It's necessary. I really think it's like a necessary part of. The recharging process, you know,
like a pilgrimage, like
absolutely,
like
you
used to do.
Yeah. You know, and it, when you do that, also you remove all of your stories, and you're just in the world.
I know where I want to go. I've dreamt of going my whole life.
Where would you go, or where will you go?
Well, Mount Kailash.
Where's that?
Mount Kailash is in Tibet. and it's this,
oh, go.
It's this sacred mountain that is at, I think, 17,000 feet.
Mm.
And it's a pilgrimage site. And Buddhist pilgrims come to this mountain and they literally do prostrations. Every step is a prostration around the entire mountain.
Mm. So a prostration, like a walking meditation?
So literally they like you've seen Buddhists bow down, so they literally bow down, get to their knees, go flat on the ground, fully extended, like you're in a boat pose, and then stand up, take a step, and do it again. Bow down, prostrate yourself.
Got it.
And do that. That's how they go around the entire mountain.
That's amazing. What a sight that would be to see.
It's a heck of a journey, but it's something that I've long wanted to do, and...
You should 1,000% do it. Yeah.
There's a great book by a guy known Robert Thurman called Circling the Sacred Mountain. And I read the book and I'm just so hungry to go on that journey.
Look, I know you have, first of all, far be it from me to give advice, but I know you have such an amazing life. You have such amazing, this thing that you've built really impacts and influences people in a positive way all around the world. And as I said, there's no way to quantify it, but also the thing that you need to do to feed yourself will also feed other people.
Yeah.
And I think you should please, like as a gift to me and to yourself and to everyone who looks up to you and to, you know, who gets stuff from your content, you know, please do that. Yeah. I got a chance. I came back recently from India and I was able to be at a monastery with the Dalai Lama for this guy named Lama Tsongkhapa, his 600-year celebration into transcending into nirvana. He was one of the earlier teachers of Buddhism. Yeah. And it was
What's
the first...
What's he eating? Because he's 600 years old. I want to know.
He's a really good guy. Very, very energetic, you know, plant-based for the most part. You know? No, anyway, so this was a big celebration for him, though, because he was one of the teachers to the Dalai Lama. Yeah. And so we get a chance to meet the Dalai Lama. Mm. And it was unbelievable, man. It was like a small group of us and literally... thousands and thousands of monks that came to celebrate this really special thing. And so when we met the Dalai Lama, he comes in and he sits down and we all kind of gather around him like children looking up to somebody who's reading a storybook. And he goes like this, he goes, compassion. And then he continued on. I didn't hear anything else he said after that, because the word compassion was like I had never heard it before.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not always what someone says and it's not always how they say it, it's who says it and what they've been through.
Yeah.
And I could just feel his experience of compassion when he said that.
Yeah.
But being in that environment, being in that new environment where I get to take off all the stories that I have, it was necessary. And then I came back recharged to reapproach my poetry career in life.
Yeah, so it's so true. We need those experiences. And you know, we all live our little narrow lives. And I remember being in northern Nepal, and I met this Tibetan doctor because I wanted to study about Tibetan medicine. I went and sat with him for a day.
Mm.
And he told me a story. He'd been in a Chinese gulag for 22 years, tortured and beaten and deprived of everything. 22 years. Finally got out. I said, what was the hardest part about being there? He says, well, it was the moments where I thought I was going to lose compassion for my Chinese jailers.
Wow.
Like, whoa.
Wow.
Whoa. Okay. So I got
another level.
I got some work to do here.
Right.
So, NQ, thank you for the work you do in the world.
Thank you, brother.
For being the sword of Manjushri, which is the Buddhist symbol of someone who cuts through the illusion with wisdom. So
thank you,
you're
man.
That dude.
That means a lot to me, man.
You're that dude, and everybody's got to get this book, Inquire Within.
Yeah, and
if
you
the audio book.
By the way, if you get the book, reach out to me on social media.
Yeah.
You know, I'm at NQ Life. Let me know that you got the book. Post about it. I want to spread the word as much as I can. I literally never had a home for my art like this. Mm. And so self-promotion has always been an issue for me.
No,
but promoting this book
is
a joy.
No, it's great. Everybody's got to get it. And I think it'll be great even to, you know, gather with your friends and read the poems out loud
for
to each other and like have that, I mean, that shared experience. I mean, I literally feel transformed just sitting here. I feel like I got a private poetry reading.
Thank you, bro.
By a superstar. I'm like, whoa, feel so blessed. And I'm grateful for you. And everybody check it out. Inquire Within on Amazon. It's available now. Please get it. It'll move you. It'll wake you up. It'll inspire you. I'm already like, wow. I think I have to just go like take a walk because I just it's been great having you on the Doctor's Pharmacy podcast. If you love this podcast, please share it with your friends, family on social media. Leave a comment. I'd love to hear from you. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you next time on the Doctor's Pharmacy.
Appreciate you, bro.
Hey, it's Dr. Hyman. Do you have FLC? Well, it's a problem that so many people suffer from and often have no idea that it's not normal or that you can fix it. So what's FLC? Well, it's when you feel like crap. And you know the feeling. It's when you're super sluggish and achy and tired, your digestion's off, you can't think clearly, you have brain fog, or you just feel kind of run down. Can you relate? I know most people can. In my experience as a practicing physician over the last 30 years, I've identified four main causes that lead to FLC. The first cause is too much sugar in the diet. Surprise. Don't think you eat that much sugar, think again. Processed carbs from bread, pasta, and cereal turn into sugar in the body. In fact, whole wheat bread spikes your blood sugar more than plain old table sugar. A diet that's high in processed carbs and sugars is the number one culprit for FLC. Okay, the second cause of FLC is not enough nutrient-dense whole foods. It's not just about avoiding sugar and processed carbs. It's also about what you do eat. Most of us don't eat enough of the right kinds of foods. This means healthy fats, clean protein, and loads of colorful plant foods. If I look at your plate, I should be able to see a rainbow. The rainbow that comes from Mother Nature, not from candy. All right, the next cause of FLC is eating too late and at the wrong time. The research shows that eating too late disrupts the quality of sleep we get at night, which can make us sluggish the next day. It also makes us hungry and crave carbs and sugar. Research also seems to show that eating too frequently and not giving your body a break from food for 12 to 14 hours negatively impacts the body's circadian rhythms and the repair processes in the body. That's why when we eat is just as important as what we eat. Now, the final cause of FLC is not prioritizing sleep. This is the number one mistake I see people make, even those of us who think we're healthy. You see, sleep is when our bodies naturally detoxify and reset and heal. Can you imagine what happens when you don't get enough sleep? You guessed it. You feel like crap. So now that we know what causes FLC, the real question is, what the heck can we do about it? Well, I hate to break the news, but there is no magic bullet solution. FLC isn't caused by one single thing, so there's not one single solution. However, there is a systems-based approach, a way to tackle the multiple root factors that contribute to FLC. And that systems-based approach involves three pillars: eating the right food, incorporating two key lifestyle habits, and a few targeted supplements. I've combined all three of these key pillars into my new 10-day reset system. It's a protocol that I've used with thousands of community members over the last few years to help them break free of FLC and reclaim their health. The 10-day reset combines food, key lifestyle habits, and targeted evidence-based supplements. Each of these areas supports our health, but when combined together, they can address the root causes that contribute to FLC. Together, they're a system, and that's why I call my 10-day reset a systems approach. Now, FLC isn't a diagnosis, it's not a medical condition, it's just something we fall into when life gets busy, or when we indulge a little too much around the holidays, or don't listen to our body's messages. It's our body out of balance. Now, everyone gets off track here and there, and the 10-day reset was designed to help you get back on track. Now, it's not a magic bullet. It's not a quick fix. It's a system that works. If you want to learn more and get your health back on track, just visit getpharmacy.com. That's getpharmacy with an F, F-A-R-M-A-C-Y.com.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Just a reminder that this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Practitioner database. It's important that you have someone in your corner who's trained, who's a licensed healthcare practitioner, and can help you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.